R. Kelly has been arrested again, this time on federal sex crime charges in Chicago. The 52-year-old singer was arrested Thursday night by NYPD detectives and investigators from the Department of Homeland Security. He's now expected to be taken to New York. That's all according to NBC News, who are citing unnamed law enforcement officials. It's not immediately clear if the new federal charges were related to previous cases.
For Amazon workers wary about more and more of these robots taking over their work, there's now a path ahead. The e-commerce giant on Thursday said it'll invest $700 million to retrain 100,000 staffers, about a third of its U.S. workforce, by 2025. The program is open to workers from warehouses to corporate offices. For example, someone with no technical background can pick up skills for a software engineering career, and those with technical backgrounds can be trained for machine learning skills.
A steep drop for Bitcoin Thursday. The cryptocurrency fell almost 8% to $11,164 in early morning trade. It follows a 3.8% slide Wednesday after Jerome Powell called on Facebook to halt its Libra crypto project. The chairman of the Federal Reserve said there were a number of issues for the US tech giant to address. Other cryptos, Ethereum and XRP's Ripple, also dropped after the Fed's comments.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's July the 12th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We begin this morning with the Dow above 27,000, the S&P above 3,000. The stock market is kicking in high gear, and we're going to talk a little bit about that on the program today with Paul Nolte, who's back from a couple of weeks off. Regular Friday guest, Paul is from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We'll bring in Paul momentarily. Lots to talk to Paul about, including the Federal Reserve's chairman's appearance before Congress this week, and, of course, some of the economic data that we've seen out this week as well. We'll find out about how our portfolios, if you've checked in on your portfolio lately or your 401k, you're probably smiling this morning. So we'll do that coming up. A little bit later in the program, Madhu Unnikrishnan will be here from Skift Airline Weekly. Brian Summers is off today, and we'll talk to Madhu about some of the airline news lately, including a big quarterly report by Delta Airlines and tax on for climate change that could be spreading around the globe on airline tickets. That'll be coming up, again, about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The trading week is winding down on Wall Street after the Dow Jones Industrials closed above 27,000 for the first time ever. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow gained 228 points. The NASDAQ fell 6 points. The S&P rose 7 points. And in after-hours trading, we see the futures numbers put the S&P over 3,000 this morning, up nearly a quarter of a percent. Dow futures are up 94 points, nearly a third. NASDAQ futures are up nearly 25 points, up nearly a third as well. As we look around the rest of the globe, markets in Europe are generally in the green. In London, up by nearly a quarter of a percent. In France, up by nearly a half a percent, a little bit lower in Germany. And in Asia, the market's also in the green. Japan ending the day up nearly a quarter of a percent. The Nikkei up 42 points. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong up nearly a quarter of a percent. And the Shanghai up nearly a half a percent. Oil is trading this morning in the U.S. at $60.41 a barrel. $60.41 a barrel, up nearly 21 cents. Let's begin with a couple of headlines, too. Nike will have a place in Arizona after all. You remember this controversy over a shoe. The shoe maker announcing yesterday it will still be opening a new manufacturing plant in Phoenix. It came after a week after the governor of Arizona ordered tax breaks offered to Nike be revoked over the company's decision to pull a shoe with the Betsy Ross American flag from the market. However, the governor seems to be changing his tune, tweeting that Arizona is open for business and welcomes Nike to the state. The plant is expected to create more than 500 jobs and result in an investment of nearly $184 million. By the way, the governor, after doing all that complaining, was spotted by a photographer over the last weekend wearing Nike tennis shoes. I wonder if that had anything to do with that decision. Also this morning, some details of what's being called a strategic alliance between Ford and Volkswagen set to be released. The Ford president and CEO and the Volkswagen CEO will give an update later this morning. The alliance between the two automakers was announced in January at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit, but we'll get some of the firm details today. The companies are looking to partner on trucks and vans in Europe, with Ford building compact pickup trucks for both companies in the next couple of years. Paul Nolte is here this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there and regular on this program as well. He's been off for the last couple of weeks. Paul, good morning. Welcome back. It's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again.
Dow, 2,700, 27,000. Where's your hat?
I'm using the black marker and converting the six to a seven. So,
and you'll be easily be able to make the eight soon as well.
Exactly.
So what's going on in the markets?
Good question. You know, one of the things that we've been talking about internally is we looked at the jobs report last Friday. We created 224,000 new jobs. We revised some of the jobs higher for the prior month. That was a good report. We got the CPI data yesterday indicating inflation running around 1.5 to 2%. And depending on how you pull that all apart, the core inflation rate was actually running a little bit hotter than we've seen in a long time. So the question becomes then, well, in those circumstances, what would the Fed be doing with monetary policy? And we're kind of scratching our head that they're cutting rates in this type of an environment. The equity markets like low interest rates. We've talked about that before, and it's been the last decade where we've had essentially zero interest rates. And a zero interest rate policy hasn't done anything to increase inflation. So to cut rates to generate inflation, I think, is a fallacy at this point. But I think the Fed is looking at the global markets and certainly looking at the equity markets and concerned that trade is going to slow the economies, and they want to make an insurance rate cut, which they'll do at the end of this month.
It's puzzling because you know, if you have a record stock market, and I guess that's one of the mandates. We were talking before the show came on this morning. It's one of the mandates, I guess, of the Federal Reserve, right?
The two mandates that they have are full employment and stable prices. That's it. Mm. They've added a third. And that's financial stability, whatever that means. And I think that's come to be interpreted as we want to have a good stock market. And certainly the stock market here as well as around the world has have responded very positively to zero interest rates. It forces savers to put money into the equity markets because you go to the bank or you go to your friendly bond dealer and say, well, what can you give me? Well, I can give you maybe 2% for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people look at that and go, oh, that's not going to cut it. I need a better return. And it forces them into the equity markets. And that's what we're seeing here, I think, at least over the last month or so.
If the trade dispute is a big issue that the Fed has been watching, what motivation does the Trump administration have for ending the trade war if it has succeeded in giving him what he has been wanting, and that is another rate cut?
Well, if that's the only thing that he wants is another rate cut, that's fine. But what we are seeing is the trade is having an impact on the global economies. We are seeing the global economy slow down. We are seeing the U.S. economy slow some. It's not recessionary, but slow some. And certainly as a voter, and we are we're still a little bit away from an election, but we always talk about elections. You want to have the economy doing extremely well when everybody goes to the polls because they tend to vote their pocketbook. If we wind up in a recession around the election, that can spell trouble for Trump. So he would love to have a very strong, robust economy. The lower interest rate environment doesn't solve trade. It doesn't do anything for trade. It doesn't make it better. So there needs to be a deal done if Trump is looking to be reelected, I think, in 2020.
Yeah, you mentioned, too, the thing that the lower rates can and can't do. One of the risks here is that we overheat the economy, isn't it?
And well, I mean, you know, yes and no. And I guess that's been the experience that we've seen over the last 10 years. We have had a very low interest rate environment. We've had negative rates around the world. We have $12 trillion in negative interest rates globally today. We haven't seen inflation pick up. We haven't seen the economies of the world really go at 4% plus persistently. The only one that has been China, and they've been slowing down as a result of the trade tariffs. So I don't think right now the environment that we're in right now is... it's a very different environment than what we've experienced during the 50s and 60s and 70s. And I think a lot of that has to do with the amount of debt that we're carrying, not only here in the United States, but globally. And we've allowed a lot of companies to limp along as opposed to clearing the deck, which is what the recession should have done, was clear the deck and allowed the bad companies to go bankrupt and start fresh. As painful as that is, but a start fresh. But we have a lot of companies right now, even today, that are cash flow negative, meaning they're paying all of their earnings out in interest payments, and none of it coming to the bottom line.
Paul deals with portfolios on a regular basis, and I'm guessing anybody, Paul, who opens their portfolio or even looks at their 401k after the first half of this year is going to be very happy.
They should be. And almost no matter what investment you made money. It's just a matter of how much. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of back to what we've been experiencing really for the last 10 years or so in the market is the S&P 500 is king of the hill. The first half of the year, the performance of the S&P was up over 17%. For 6 months, that's a good year. And even the bonds did well. Bonds were up 4 to 5% for the first half of the year. International was up about 10 to 14%. Again, not bad, but not as good as the S&P. So if you're benchmarking your portfolio against the S&P 500, anything that you did outside of the S&P, small cap, mid cap, international, bonds, you lag the S&P 500. But when you look at the absolute rate of return, it was a very, very good 6 month period.
What do we like here? What do we do now? I know you were taking money off the table a little bit.
Yeah, we're doing that a little bit just as far as rebalancing. The equity markets, I think, can continue their run for a while. You know, as much as I'm at odds maybe with the Fed at this point and maybe a rate cut, certainly the what they're doing is forcing people into the equity market. So the equity markets should trade a little bit higher over the course of the rest of the year. And we're seeing actually interest rates pick up a little bit. As much as they're talking about cutting rates, the last week or two, interest rates have actually backed up, which means the bond prices have gone down. So we still think you should rebalance a little bit, take a little bit of money off the table, be a little bit more conservative here. Again, international is very inexpensive to U.S. Value is very cheap relative to growth. But those trends have persisted for a long time. They've been that way for many, many years. We think it is going to change. We're just not sure when it's going to change, but we want to look at those cheaper parts of the market. Certainly international and value investing is very inexpensive right now in the marketplace. So those are the areas that we're trying to put some money into if you're looking for a place to put new money.
Earlier this year, I know we've had some conversations about whether or not there might be a recession later this year or early next year. Can we stop talking about that now, or are there still concerns?
There are still very much concerns. When you look at the Global Purchasing Managers Index, the global PMIs, and you look at the PMIs even around the different Fed regions, the manufacturing is below 50 now globally. And so that points to contraction. Not recession, but at least contraction. And it's very different than what we've seen over the last since the last recession. And we're seeing that turn down in a lot of the Fed regions as well. So that manufacturing part of the economy is not doing well. The services side is still doing well, but it is slowing, still above 50. And we're seeing durable goods orders tail off. We're seeing some of those parts of the market or parts of the economy not do that well. A lot of companies, and we're going to hear a ton over the next 3 weeks as we get to the earnings season, about the impacts of trade. And so from that perspective, Chair Powell is correct in that trade is having a big impact on global growth. Is it enough to push into a recession? We'll find out. But certainly we're moving in that direction. We haven't skated past the recession and made a soft landing. That's what the Fed is trying to engineer with the talks of rate cuts here. But I don't think a recession is yet off the table.
What do you like? Any stocks in particular?
always can find a couple good stocks. And one that you mentioned earlier that we have in portfolios is AbbVie. We do like the technology sector, so we do like that. I think is one of the areas that is probably the best able to grow in this environment. So the very large companies like a Cisco or Intel, which are really the guts of much of the technology, Amazon continues to do wonderfully well here and is well positioned globally. And even some of the international stocks like an Alibaba or a Tencent out of China, I think, are very good companies here as well. So there's a lot of things that are relatively cheap. There's a lot that are expensive, and parts of the market that are expensive in our eyes are the safer stuff like utilities, which are trading at 20, 22 times earnings for generally companies that grow at 3 to 4% a year. And a lot of people have flocked there because of the dividends and because they pay nice dividends over the course of time. But from a valuation perspective, they're very expensive here.
All right, Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, we can talk their portfolios, their 401ks, their financial plans, and retirement. And they can email me at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
All right, Paul, we'll see you again next Friday. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, where he's a senior vice president and senior portfolio manager.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Delta Airlines reporting a strong quarter, their quarterly earnings report out yesterday, and some news about a potential carbon tax on airline tickets starting in France. A couple of big aviation stories this week. We're going to talk to Madhu Unnikrishnan, editor at Skift Airline Weekly, about some of that today. And Madhu's with us this morning via Skype from New York. Madhu, let's begin with Delta, strong earnings report from the airline and some strong guidance looking forward to the rest of the year.
Well, Delta is a machine. You know, under its current management, Delta has been a consistent moneymaker and has always led the industry in its revenues and profitability. I mean, yes, Allegiant is ahead in terms of margins, but in terms of the large network carriers, it's always ahead of everyone else. Ed Bastian said that you know, Delta does not operate the 737 MAX, but he did say that there was a slight, and as he put it, marginal benefit for Delta because of that. You know, the other Southwest and American have had to ground parts of their fleet and are taking a revenue penalty from not having all of their fleet operable during the busiest time of year. I think Americans said it would be north of $100 million. So yeah, I think that helped, but Delta just, you know, as I said, it's a machine, and it just it didn't need the help, but it certainly benefited from it.
Yeah, and it sort of gives us a window into what's going on at some of the other airlines. American said this week that it is likely going to see an $885 million cut from the second quarter. So it gives you a sense of how the other airlines, how much they're losing because of the 737 MAX, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, this is, like I said, this is the quarter airlines make most of their money, the summer peak travel period. So to have even a small part of your fleet grounded, you know, having to cancel flights, American just completely canceled Oakland, California to Dallas, which is the first MAX related casualty, route casualty in the U.S. so far. So, you know, they're having to look at their schedules, they're having to trim where they can, and they're just carrying fewer passengers. So at the busiest time of the year.
Yeah, is there any sense do we have of when 737 MAX may be back in the air? I know we've been talking about September 3rd as a cancellation on due date, but what's going on? What's the latest with the MAX?
You know, I wish I had a crystal ball, because if you'd asked me this question 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have said, yeah, we're on track for the MAX to come back in the early autumn. But it just seems like there's, you know, regulators have found new issues with it that need to be addressed, and it's hard to say when it'll go back into service. And even if, you know, another thing to remember is even if the FAA recertifies the aircraft and says it's safe to fly, regulators around the world are not necessarily going to follow the lead of the FAA, and it may take some time. So I just don't know.
Yeah, and then after that, you have the customers being the loyalty factor on this. How long will it take to regain the confidence of flyers?
You know, I think that is a little bit overblown, right? I mean, most people who buy an airline ticket don't know what aircraft they're boarding when they fly. So there will be some people who book away because they're not comfortable. But I do think that once it's safe to fly and it's been flying for a couple of weeks, people will forget. And, you know, we just have to look back to this has happened several times before, well before my time, that, you know, the DC-10 was grounded in the 70s due to two very high profile accidents. And apparently, you know, if you look at press reports from the time, people said they wouldn't fly it. It was this terrible aircraft, but it continued to run for the airlines till the early 2000s. People just forgot.
Yeah. So I was checking out Skiff's Airline Weekly, the news that you edit there. You've sort of done a mid-year review of the aviation industry. What are the highlights as we're here at mid-year?
Interestingly enough, so far this year, Europe has been one of the most interesting regions of the world. It's had a lot of high profile bankruptcies, Wow Air, for example. The big European carriers, Air France, Lufthansa, even British Airways, or IAG, the parent of British Airways, have just not had any luck making money on short haul routes like within Europe. They're making all their money on these long haul routes. And then there's the low cost carrier. So what's interesting about Europe is it's just in a place, it's not as consolidated as the US is, right? So there's just a lot of players and a lot of competition, and it's going to be interesting to watch to see how airlines figure out how to make money in Europe again.
Yeah, and with Brexit coming up as well, that's going to be another of the unknowns, isn't it?
Once again, I wish I had that crystal ball.
Yeah, right.
No one knows what's going to happen with Brexit. No one knows what will happen. So stay tuned.
How much has the impact of the trade war been a factor in aviation so far this year?
You know, so far it hasn't been reflected in passenger traffic, but it has been reflected in cargo traffic. And remember, you know, especially on flights to Asia, the belly of the aircraft is full of cargo. You know, there's luggage, of course, but, you know, they make a significant amount of money. Airlines make a significant amount of money carrying cargo in the belly of their aircraft. And the trade war has caused a pretty precipitous decline in cargo traffic. So that's where we're seeing it now. It remains to be seen if passengers will stop traveling. But so far for the summer season, everything looks okay.
You know, we just finished the conversation about the 737 MAX, but I have to believe that once the year is over and you're doing the year in review, that Boeing will be front and center in this year's aviation news, right?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you know, they can't sell their best-selling aircraft. That's going to sting, and it'll sting for a while. Not to mention, you know, they're going to have to compensate airlines and the victims of the two accidents. So, it'll hurt in the short term. However, one thing to keep in mind is that there's still, you know, a backlog of several thousand aircraft. So Boeing has a pipe. Once this thing is declared safe to fly, it's got years of a backlog. And so far, only two airlines have indicated that they're going to cancel their orders. So, I think it's a short term. I hate to say it, but it looks like it'll be some short term pain for Boeing. But let's see what happens next year.
There's another story. We reported on this earlier this week that France is putting this eco tax in place on flights out of that country. Is this something that other countries might be considering? How big of a deal is this going to be?
This is an interesting story. I mean, particularly European carriers for a long time trying to figure out how to get airlines to pay for climate change and their effect on climate change. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, the European Union tried to include airlines in its cap and trade program for carbon dioxide, caused worldwide outcry. So that didn't really work out, and they're trying different ways. I think we'll see more of this. You know, France is among the first. I think we'll see more as climate change becomes even more of an issue for governments and for people around the world. But in particular in Europe. But I don't know which country will be next. There will be one. I just don't know which one.
Do you think air flyers are willing to part with $7 to $20 per ticket to cover the cost of something like this?
I don't think they'll notice. I think if you asked Joe Traveler, will you pay for this? He might balk. But you have to remember, all the taxes and fees that are in your ticket, you see a base fare of $600 and you end up paying $1,200 because of all the taxes and fees. 7 to 10 euros or whatever it is will get hidden and will be quickly forgotten about.
Yeah, I think people have already sort of felt that way about the 9/11 extension, right?
Right.
People don't even notice that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. There's that in the U.S. There's, in a lot of countries, there are fuel surcharges that you don't notice. It's just people just pay the fee and don't really notice. Occasionally, there'll be some outcry from my passenger rights group that says, the base fare is $600, but why is the ticket 12? But I think it'll just get lost. I think the larger issue, though, is this, the concern in the industry that governments around the world see airlines as a cash cow. And this is particularly true in Latin America, where it's sort of still, air travel is still seen as a luxury, not a necessity. So, tickets are taxed more than other forms of transport. So, there's a little bit of that in the French tax that, yes, it is about climate change, but there's a sentiment that, well, air travelers will pay it, right? So that's something that to keep an eye on and probably would be detrimental to the industry if it got out of control.
Madhu, a good conversation. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Madhu Unnikrishnan, editor at Skift Airline Weekly. You can find more online at airlineweekly.com. And make sure you check out Skift as well at skift.com and at Twitter, at Skift.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward gains later this morning. Dow futures are up 96 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures up about a third this morning as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you. Another USDA report yesterday didn't make much of a difference in prices, however, because there weren't any real major changes. Wheat did hit a one-week top after the USDA report, and corn and soybeans also climbed slightly, but not much in the way of a trade difference. Now, this morning, we're getting reports on China trade, and the China June trade surplus with the United States rose 11% to $29.9 billion. The biggest trading partner, of course, is China. And trade continues to decline. Soybean imports fell 11.5% in June from May. China brought in 6.5 million tons of soybeans in June, down from 7.3 million tons in May, according to data from the Chinese General Administration of Customs. While Chinese buyers last year scooped up Brazilian supplies in anticipation of heavy tariffs on U.S. cargoes, importers this year were better prepared with stock. So again, the trade between China and the United States, we've always seen China with a big lead in the exports and imports, and that trade imbalance continues between China and the United States.
Orion, there had been talk after the last at the G20 summit that China was going to start buying some more agricultural products from the U.S. Is there any evidence that has been happening?
Not really. As a matter of fact, President Trump commented yesterday in a chat with reporters that China was not living up to its promises to buy more U.S. agricultural products. And so far, we're not seeing it happen. The president also said that Mexico was doing a much better job on the border situation there. So he's pleased with that, but he's not pleased with China. And, of course, face-to-face talks are underway once again between negotiators in China and the United States. But we've been watching those negotiations for a year and a half, and not much has happened. So I don't see a lot of promise in picking up the exports of soybeans and other products to China.
Yeah, and we're still waiting on NAFTA Part 2, right? That's not
still waiting on that. I tell you, Congress just doesn't do its job on immigration laws, and it doesn't do its job on getting ready to prove the situation with Canada and Mexico. Canada and Mexico, Steve, are, well, they announced a month ago that they're ready to sign what I call NAFTA 2, the Canada-U.S.-Mexico trade agreement, and Congress just keeps doing nothing. So I don't know when we'll get that one set either.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to place any bets on that one. Orion, what's on the morning show tomorrow?
We have one of the most delightful 15-year-old 4-H girls I've ever talked to coming on to talk to us about the importance of county fairs. She shows at the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake, Illinois, and one of the brightest young ladies I've talked to in a long time. So she'll be on. Jim Fazell will be on. And, of course, we'll be talking the market situation, which we do every Saturday morning.
All right. We'll be listening. Orion, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Orion Samuelson with us. Of course, the morning show hits the air tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July the 12th. Producer prices for June are due out. Analysts are forecasting a tenth of a percent increase over May. They see producer prices increasing 1.7% over the last year. Not much else on the calendar today. It's quiet in the earnings category as well. Not much happening in monetary policy either after a busy day this week with the Federal Reserve Chairman before Congress. So just a few things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 12th.